Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
In the morning, 720 WGN. As you heard Vic Vaughn just say, we are checking in with meteorologist Tim McGill over at the WGN-TV Weather Center. I knew it was coming, Tim, but I still woke up to about an inch, and I thought, oh, please. Come on.
Yeah. It's just awful. This is like the winter that will never end.
And has there been a winter like this that just won't quit? I mean, I know it's always cold on opening day. We get that. But just that lingers like this in such a long time?
Yeah, there have been. What's unusual in terms of records is it's not a record, but this is the fourth coldest start to April we've ever seen so far. Now, that could change, but it doesn't look like it's going to change a whole lot. We've got some 50s coming up for the weekend, but no 60s or 70s. We've had snow, I think, 7 out of 15 days so far this month. This will be the 7th out of 16 days. So it's just been miserable. It just kind of lingers on and on and on. We've got more snow this morning, as you've been talking about, a couple of inches up near the Wisconsin state line possible, where we've got those winter weather advisories. The rest of us will be seeing kind of spottier snow showers, but it's going to feel like the middle of February, not like the middle of April. We're going to see wind chills today in the teens and 20s. It's just awful.
But 50s on the weekend, Tim, so this is the end of it then, after that?
Hopefully. It doesn't mean we couldn't get a little bit more snow, but it does look like we're going to warm up to 50s, probably beginning on Friday, all the way through the weekend, and no precipitation this weekend. Should be dry.
And then you'll finally be invited back to the family parties.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't talk to me anymore.
Tim, what's thunder snow? I know we've explained this term before, but mm-hmm. I heard you talking about that over the weekend at the TV station.
It's basically like a thunderstorm, but instead of producing rain, it produces snow. It's just a storm that has a lot of vertical lift to it, so the atmosphere gets really unstable, and you can hear thunder. You could see lightning and hear thunder in some of the more intense storms, and that's probably what they had in northern Wisconsin. I guess you're alluding to that.
Yeah.
30 inches of snow in parts of Wisconsin over the weekend. Yeah, I talked to my cousin who's up in the St. Germain area. They've got a couple feet of ice on the lake still. Now they've got a couple feet of snow on top of the ice. So they might be fishing in maybe July up that way.
Guess we shouldn't be complaining.
Yeah, right. What did they end up with in Minneapolis where the Sox couldn't play this weekend?
Well, the first day that they were supposed to play, I think they got about 13 inches. I don't know what the total is. I'm guessing it's probably about 16 or 17 inches.
Wow. And holy cow, and I've never seen so much baseball canceled.
No, it's a record.
And both sides of town.
The most since 2000. 22 games so far.
Yeah. Oh, St. Paul got 15 inches of snow. Stevens Point, Wisconsin got 28.5 inches. Green Bay got 23.2 inches. It's just terrible.
It's like it's the middle of winter. It's literally like it's mid-December.
Yeah.
Tim, we have snow flurries now. This afternoon, how about the afternoon rush?
Yeah, the snow we're seeing now will be tapering off by about 9 or 10 o'clock to kind of spotty snow showers and little additional accumulation after that point. We'll see a few this afternoon. The evening rush, you might see a couple light snow showers or flurries, but it shouldn't be a big deal. And by then, the pavement will have warmed, hopefully a little bit at least. But yeah, it looks a lot better for this evening's commute compared to this morning.
All right, we'll hold out a little vigil until the 50s come back.
All right, hang in there.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Hashtag McGill Strong.
Yeah,
we're
right
with you, Tim.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
So now that it's been established that you live in a ridiculous climate, this is not even a climate, as you discussed. Ridiculous. We're just going to go with ridiculous. That's today's word. It's like Sesame Street. The word of the day is ridiculous. The number of the day is 20, because that's the wind chill right now.
Yes. It's ridiculous. 27 degrees. Wind chill is almost teetering in the teens.
And thanks again to Tim. Item number one. James Comey, talking to George Stephanopoulos last night, said the president is morally unfit to be president. We'll play some of the clips from the interview last night in case you missed it. Surprisingly, the president has not responded this morning yet by Twitter. You can check that feed if you want. That's as of, 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
But yesterday morning, he threw out about 7 or 8 or 9 of them. But as of now, nothing from the White House. There will be a briefing later today, and we'll see where it goes from there. But much to say about the Comey interview coming up. The attack on Syria Friday night continues to be, the third or fourth story in the lineup. A full-on military attack on another country, and it's barely being mentioned this morning.
How about that?
100 and some odd missiles sent into Syria to eliminate or do significant damage to their chemical weapons storage. It appears that that happened, but it also appears that none of the mobile systems to deliver those chemical weapons was affected. And there was a point made that they're not looking for regime change. Well, without Assad being gone, nothing changes. So we will see if there's any more comment on this today. But surprisingly quiet from Russia, other than a vague threat from the ambassador here, and surprisingly quiet from the White House and the Defense Department beyond the briefing Saturday morning. It's bizarre.
Absolutely.
There was much more said last year about the smaller attack on the particular airbase.
Right, right.
But in case you missed it, the United States of America, in cooperation with the UK and France, attacked another country Friday night. I mean, this is the type of thing you were going to wake up on April 16th. It's going to be snowing in Chicago.
Yep.
Next, Barbara Bush has decided to stop taking medical treatment to prolong her life. She is 92 years old and quite ill, and has decided she's had enough of going into the hospital and coming out of the hospital, and what will be will be. She's an amazing woman. Mm-hmm. The pleasure of spending a little time with her, and she is absolutely the foundation of the Bush dynasty.
Yeah.
Let's not write her off yet, kids. At 92 years old, it wouldn't surprise me if she rallies at least another time. Next, Washington plans to impose new sanctions on Moscow today, punishing it for helping that Syrian government use what is believed to be chemical weapons. Those sanctions have not yet been announced or even leaked. We'll see what they are beyond what we already know is out there. I don't know how much more can be done beyond what's already on the books. The economic squeeze that's been put on, maybe there's more of that to come. If you see an odd-looking fellow who's the Treasury Secretary who's married to a woman who likes to pose with money, that'll tell you it's specifically economic sanctions, and that guy's Steve Mnuchin.
Oh, yeah. You know what I thought of over the weekend, too? How strange. I know we're going to talk about Mueller and whatnot, too, and the probe, but could if communications break down, which they seem to be between the United States and Russia, and we get back to, say, Cold War, that icy status that with the two countries had, do you think Mueller would ever try to subpoena, not Putin, but maybe Sergei Lavrov or somebody within the Russian administration? Can he do that?
Yeah, he can do it, but unless they're in country, there's no way you can get him to show up. So. Mm.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah. I'd love to see Putin testify.
How about that?
I'd like to see Putin testify to Congress. Watch, now I'll have that dream tonight. And winter weather advisory remains in effect for Boone, McHenry, and Lake counties. There was one person in particular I saw in the Eisenhower this morning who I think just gave up. Didn't appear to be anything wrong with her car. Was just stuck in the middle lane, four ways around, and it looked like they just quit.
Yeah.
Like, look, I can't take it anymore. It's April 16th. This is a December day, kids, that you're looking out the window at. And nothing like this in my recent memory. And this snap that we've had now for, what is it, going on 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
That's enough. It's enough. And that's your top 6 at 6.
That's it!
That's all today for the top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Haven't you had that feeling, though, where you just go, that's it, I'm out. I'm just done. I'm just leaving my car and I'm walking.
I mentioned I let my dog out this morning. I was telling these guys, and he just turned around. I opened the door and he turned around and looked at me. He said, "You're kidding, right?"
Yeah, right.
It's April 16th.
Goes, Dave, have you seen what's going on out here?
Yeah. Hey, you guys, we don't have as bad out as northern Wisconsinites. My mother-in-law hasn't left the house in 3 days.
That's what Tim said.
She can't get out.
Green Bay got 20-plus inches of snow.
Well, you know, Ross and Lauren and Abigail went back to where Ross and Lauren had their honeymoon in Door County.
Oh.
And they went up Friday night,
oh boy,
planning on spending the weekend. And Saturday night, they evacuated.
Good call.
Because the storm was kicking into Wisconsin Saturday night into Sunday.
Good call on their part.
Smart.
And while I feel really badly for the people in northern Wisconsin, including your mother-in-law, I don't live there. So I would like it to be better here.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Mary, I would trade that. I would take better here for worse in northern Wisconsin.
Oh,
that's it. That's what I do.
That's very mean.
By the way, how's your overnight with your grand squirt?
Oh, I survived. She was great. She was such
she
a
was.
Good baby.
Of course she
the
was.
Dog, however.
Well, you're taking care of their dog, too?
Well, of course. Every kid now has a dog. All these millennials had dogs
no,
and
Abigail
babies.
Doesn't.
Well, that's the first I've heard. It's like you get the dog with the baby. So,
don't think it works that way.
Oh, we
the
do.
Baby doesn't leave the. There's no dog pound at the hospital where they hand them out with babies.
I feel like it, but my son's like, well, she likes the dog around because then she feels like somebody's with her. I'm fine, no problem. Anyway, she did great. She slept all night. Right, my husband was up all night though, listening to her.
Yeah, same here. Same here. As a matter of fact, I would have come over.
Yeah, you should have.
Yeah.
You needed help. Yeah. I felt
I'm more than willing to worry for other people. So, Dave, you had a nice weekend?
We did. And we dropped our dog off with my son.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were calling him periodically to see how's he doing. Is he sleeping?
It's ridiculous.
Why did you drop your dog off with your son?
On the way to the Northwestern Gridiron Network, a night for victory on Saturday night.
But your dog's been home alone. Night.
Well, no, we were staying downtown, so thought it would be best not to leave him by himself the entire night.
Has he never spent an overnight alone?
His dog parties. You know,
he'd get on the internet?
Yeah, well, you don't want that happening.
No. Actually, his paws are so small, he could probably operate the keys.
Oh, yeah, he does. Smart, too.
How was your weekend?
It was good. I covered a couple of festivals this weekend, Rum Fest and Cheese Fest. For Channel 9.
I could have done those together.
I know.
All you needed was a chocolate fest, and you really would have had fun.
I think that's next weekend, the rum, wine and chocolate fest.
Rum, chocolate, and cheese.
Yeah. Right.
Yummy.
How about that?
How was your
was
weekend,
fun,
Steve?
Yeah, Steve, how was
busy.
Your weekend?
Busy, but we don't have time to talk about it.
Did you golf?
I canceled two tee times.
Speaking of that, I saw our friend Lizzie Coghill on Friday. She said, you guys have to come out maybe next week, and then texted me yesterday after all the snowfall and said, yeah, why don't you guys come out in a couple weeks?
Stuff on golf courses.
Oh, yeah.
This is like ski facilities, you know, in December. They don't have snow. Golf courses expect to be open by now.
Yeah.
So let's play a couple clips from last night. James Comey and George Stephanopoulos on the first meeting with Trump. Listen.
Were you nervous?
Yes.
What were you afraid of?
I'm about to meet with a person who doesn't know me. He's just been elected president of the United States. From my watching him during the campaign, could be volatile. And I'm about to talk to him about allegations that he was involved with prostitutes in Moscow and that the Russians taped it and have leverage over him.
It was the first time you met Donald Trump. What was your impression?
He had impressively coiffed hair that looks to be all his. I confess I stared at it pretty closely. And my reaction was, must take a heck of a lot of time in the morning. His tie was too long, as it always is. He looked slightly orange up close with small white half moons under his eyes, which I assume are from tanning goggles.
That's the part of the interview that has been pulled by the Trump side, talking about how petty and bitchy Comey is being. But he's also taking nothing but grief from the White House and the President of the United States, throwing him under the bus for an entire year without him being able to defend it or choosing to defend it until now.
Mm-hmm.
He's a private citizen. He's got a right to stand up for himself. Now, I wish he hadn't said it because he does sound like, you know, a little bit bitchy.
It's silly,
a little bit mean girl. But you got to remember, too, he's 6'8". So he's looking right down at the Trump hair.
Right.
So he goes and says hello to him. He's looking down. He's going, what the hell's going on down there? Because he's above Trump and he's looking down.
And kind of in Comey's defense, too, Stephanopoulos asked him, what was your first impression? Okay, so they just sat down. He's thinking superficially or aesthetically. You know, he hadn't spoken with him yet. So he started describing him.
I can say this. Having met Trump on several occasions, the first time you see him, every time you see him, it's hard not to stare. He's an odd looking dude. He's a big guy who tans constantly, who's got weird hair. You got to get beyond that before you start to. It's just a human thing,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
This one's important. Comey and Stephanopoulos, what was Trump's initial reaction to Russian meddling? Comey expected something different. Listen.
President-elect Trump's first question was to confirm that it had no impact on the election. Then the conversation, to my surprise, moved into a PR conversation about how the Trump team would position this and what they could say about this. That's just not done.
You also said you were struck by what they didn't ask.
Very much. No one, to my recollection, asked, so what's coming next from the Russians? How might we stop it? What's the future look like? It was none of that. It was all, what can we say about what they did and how it affects the election that we just had?
You said as this was happening, you had a flashback to your early days as a prosecutor.
I had a flashback to my days investigating the mafia, La Cosa Nostra.
Can you imagine if George Bush on the morning after 9/11 was being briefed and said, "Now wait a minute, how does this impact me? How does this? What are we? What are Cheney and I going to say about this to make sure we get reelected in 2 or 3 years?" That's just incredible. It's incredible. Those are the type of things that really should jump out of the interview. Some of the headlines certainly aren't that. And we'll get to more of those clips throughout the morning from the Comey Stephanopoulos interview. He will be on The View because The View sells books. I won't be watching, but he will. He'll be on with Jake Tapper later this week. He'll also be on with Rachel Maddow later this week.
Colbert,
and we hope to get him here. And Colbert when?
Tomorrow night.
Okay. Yeah.
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Morse right now. Doc,
I have a new condition. Good morning to you, by the way.
Good morning.
I have something that I believe is called SAV. It's seasonal affective violence. If we don't get that, if it doesn't get nice soon, I'm going to be prone to violence. Is there anything you can give me for that?
Yeah, it's going to be about 2 weeks.
That's not a great prescription. That doesn't help me.
It really isn't. It isn't. You know, and you do bring up a point. A lot of people are pretty bummed about this weather, but there's a huge difference between feeling the blues about the weather and how bad it is and how we want to get outside versus true depression. But it is unfortunate. We either need to move south or we need to find out more about this global warming.
We love this city. Can't we move Chicago temporarily, maybe, you know, 500 miles south?
Yeah.
It's going to take a big truck.
I was going to say, I'll pitch in for the moving costs.
Yeah, maybe a Chevy Silverado. Doc, as you know, I lost a good friend to bipolar disorder. We're going to talk about bipolar disorder and depression today, and I would highly recommend RebeccasDream.org as a website with great, great resources for anybody that's going through this or loves somebody that is. But let's talk about it. What is bipolar disorder?
Well, bipolar disorder is a disorder that unfortunately has swings in your mood. So you have times when you are very depressed, you can be severely depressed, and then all of a sudden that depression goes away and you have feelings of manic feelings. So you go from mania to depression and you have these big mood swings. So they go up and they go down. So people are not depressed all the time. As a matter of fact, there's some times where they feel unbelievably good. They have too much energy. And then there's times when they have the depression. So that's why it's called bipolar. Two swings, two mood swings that people can have.
And there is a lesser form that was named a few years ago called bipolar 2. It's similar circumstances. It just doesn't have the dramatic highs and lows, but equally debilitating.
Absolutely. You know, people have to realize, when they're in the manic phase, they must be very productive in that. And it's not true. This is a very debilitating disease and is very concerning. And one that people need to be aware of because they may have the symptoms themselves, or they may see someone in their family or their friends that have the symptoms. And probably the most important thing is awareness. I mean, Mariah Carey came out last week and shared with the world in People magazine that she's been suffering from this, and that for a long time she had denied it and said, I don't have this, even though people were telling her she had it.
Doc,
it's a big deal, too, for Mariah Carey.
Right,
to come out.
And Catherine Zeta-Jones a few years earlier did the same thing.
Yep.
How is it diagnosed? Because I know people are listening to this, and we all in our life have highs and lows. Some days we're happy, some days we're depressed. It depends on our work or our personal lives. How is it diagnosed?
Yeah, and a good thing, Andre, because you know what? There is no blood test for it. So it's not like we can do a blood test and say you have bipolar disease. The other big thing about it is often the doctor is not going to know it unless the patient is willing to share that they have these symptoms. So we have to get past the social stigma of I don't want to tell anybody this. But the individual would have to share with the doctor, share with a loved one that, hey, you know what? I am having these symptoms of depression. I feel sad. I feel hopeless. I feel like I'm worthless to society. I have no energy. I'm exhausted. You know, I'm sleeping a lot. You know, Steve and I love to play golf. If I kept asking Steve to play golf and he said, you know what, I really don't want to. Those are things that are concerning from the depressive side of it. And then when they're in the manic phase, they feel wired. They feel crazy. They feel like they're on caffeine. They have a lot of energy. So if you see someone with those big swings in personality that happens over and over and over, that's the individual we're concerned about.
And Rebecca, at the end, before she took her life at 30, she just couldn't deal with it anymore. The constant pharmacological experiment of trying to get the meds right, and then they level off and you have to redo it again. And, you know, she would literally go through phases where she couldn't get out of bed. I mean, just crushing depression. I also played golf for a few years with a guy who was a big deal at BP. I played baseball at Ohio State. And everything in the world looked like it was lined up. And he was bipolar. And he got so off the beam, he lost his job, his wife, and almost lost his life. And most recently thought he could knock a wall down in a particular place where he was living and ran into it and could have caused paralysis. And I've heard that he's recovering. But it's dramatic. It has incredibly high suicide rates. And I thought one of the interesting things I saw in your notes, Doc, is that, and I don't want to, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but a traumatic experience can cause this. So do we see this in returning military folks who suffer from PTSD?
Exactly. So, you know, people always say, well, what causes it? And, you know, there is a small portion of people, you can definitely track it back to genetics. But for other people, it's a life-changing event that kind of can trigger it, whether it's a loss of a loved one, whether it is a traumatic event in their childhood. Those are the ones that we can't figure out, well, how can that trigger it in some people and not trigger it in other people? Because we know this is a chemical imbalance in the brain, but how is it triggered? And for some reason, we find that a traumatic incident can actually trigger and start the symptoms of bipolar.
How do you treat it, Doc?
Yeah, Andrew, you know, it's one of those that is difficult to treat, and Steve just kind of hit it on the head there. You know, one of the things with the treatment is, one is therapy, so you definitely should be seeing whether it's a licensed social worker, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, and we'll talk a little bit about the shortage of those in a few minutes. But then also we're finding that there are medications that help. Now, the medications, as Steve said, it's a difficult thing. This is not like taking an antibiotic where I give it to you and I start to see results here within 24 or 48 hours. As a matter of fact, a lot of these medications take up to 4 to 6 weeks for them to work. It may even take several months for them to go into a full effect. So you can imagine the individual who's going through these symptoms taking these medications and seeing or not seeing a delayed response in the medication.
All right, we want to talk about depression as well, because these are equal, and they're not, but they are both debilitating in your life. Everybody goes through periods of depression. I mean, everybody. The question is, do you have clinical depression versus difficult days at times? The worst thing you could do is tell somebody to snap out of it, walk it off, you have so much to live for, or any of the other things that you say to somebody to make you feel better. You need to listen and offer advice, and the advice needs to be not how they fix it, but how you can help them find people who can help them, whether it's taking them to a therapist or taking them to a hospital. Those are the ways you help. Shut up and listen. I can't encourage you to do that more. But Doc, before we leave bipolar, depressive portion of the disorder, just to reiterate this, feeling sad or hopeless, no energy, completely exhausted, excessive sleeping, no enjoyment in activities, which can swing on a dime to the manic portion, to feeling excessive energy, acting out, whether it's drinking or drugging or sexual things, feeling wired, unable to control your emotions, crying at the drop of a hat, rapid talking, constant talking, disconnected with racing thoughts. The guy that I mentioned at one point, Doc, showed up outside our window here when I used to do the afternoon show. And this is a guy, again, it was a big deal at BP, who was disheveled and yelling and was talking about how he was going to buy the Tribune Tower. And we had to call and get him help just to get him off the street. So it's just one of the more awful things that can happen to you.
It really is. And the bad thing about bipolar, too, is when people are put on medication and the medication works, often they're going to get into that manic phase and they say, are you kidding? I don't need medication anymore. I feel great.
Right.
And they stop that medication. And that's probably one of the bigger things, is they need to have continued therapy and continually talking to a professional, whether, like I said, whether it's a social worker, a psychologist, psychiatrist, so that they have that continued care, because it does impact not only their quality of life, but their quantity of life as well.
Rebeccasdream.org. Please check that out. We'll come back and talk about the depression side of this story. And again, everybody has it, and not nearly enough people talk about it. Dr. Kevin Most. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Doc, one of the things we try to point out with Rebecca's Dream all the time to folks, and this is sort of the mantra, and I know you believe this, is there is no walk it off, there is no snap out of it when it comes to this stuff, and we need to treat depression with the same seriousness that we treat cancer and heart disease and all the other major ailments.
Absolutely. I mean, depression is the 10th leading cause of death in this country, and shouldn't be, because it can be treated. We have 45,000 suicides a year, and that's even a low number, because you have to remember that we can prevent many suicides with quick treatment, and then we also have some deaths that are suicides that we don't even know. So we really have to get our arms around this and understand that this is a major health problem. And I say that, Steve, and then I'm going to tell you a stat that's probably going to blow you away, but 60% of the countries in the United States don't have a single psychiatrist in that county, excuse me, not country, counties.
60% of the counties in this country?
Do not have one single psychiatrist within the county.
Holy cow, I have no idea.
80% of rural counties do not have a single psychiatrist.
Well, is it because that practice just folks just aren't inclined to live in those areas or what?
Yeah, it was part of that. Part is that we do not, definitely do not have enough psychiatrists, don't have enough people going into psychiatric medicine. So we really start to need to say, okay, if we don't have enough psychiatrists, what are we going to do? And we start to need to look at how are we going to use social workers who are very highly talented and can take care of some of this, and psychologists. But my point is being is 10% of people in this country have depression, and yet a large portion of the country, we do not even have treatment options for them. So we really need to start focusing on that and how we're going to get it, because it doesn't matter whether you live in DeKalb County or whether you live in Cook County. It's still the stats of 10%.
Yeah, and the 10% is the clinical diagnosed clinical depression. Because out of the 90% that aren't diagnosed, I believe every one of us at some point in life has depression. It's a matter of whether or not it's taken to the stage of being diagnosed as clinical or its particular phases that you go through. But those are serious phases.
Absolutely. And you know, fortunately, at least we now have more insurance coverage in some cases, but even that is not as strong as it should be. And getting past that social stigma of patients saying, you know what, like you said, oh, I'm just going to shake this off, or tell someone telling them to shake it off. You need to understand that your quality of life can be so much better if you have these symptoms and you get them treated. It will change your life. It will change the lives of people around you. So doctors are used to it. We see patients who are depressed. Don't come in there being embarrassed that you're depressed. It's like coming in having a sinus infection. We know that you have issues. We know that you have treatment options. So please go reach out for help.
You touched on this very quickly just a second ago, Doc. Healthcare coverage. Will insurance pay for it? Will they pay for the diagnosis and or the treatment? And you said it's getting better. How much better?
Well, it's getting better because a lot of people used to just totally say we're not going to treat it. But now you're at least starting to see that insurance companies are treating it, but they are going to limit it. Are they going to allow inpatient? Are they going to have outpatient? How many visits outpatient? So it really depends on your insurance policy, but something that you should look into. One other thing that I really need to talk about really just quickly is about the medications. A study that came out of the New York Times last week which showed people that were trying to stop their medications and the side effects that they were having from them. Very important, if you get to a point where you feel that you don't need your medicine anymore, talk to your physician, make sure it's a decision between the two of you, because these are medicines that you just don't stop immediately. Yeah, bad things can happen to you when you do that. So we want to make sure that we either wean you off or make sure that, hey, you know what, you may think you need to come off, but we need to keep you on these meds.
There is some success being shown now with significantly depressed folks in ketamine. We can talk about that another day, but it certainly looks promising. And we know anecdotally cases where it's worked very well already. But I just want people to understand this, too. I have had significant bouts of depression my entire life. I've been medicated for, I don't know, 15, 20 years now. And it makes a phenomenal difference. And I've done talk therapy off and on for, you know, probably the last 30 years. And, you know, I grew up in a scenario where nobody did that. And I thought you had to be nuts to go to a therapist. Doc, I think it ought to be a law. Everybody ought to be in therapy at some point. I've said this a million times, like a health club for your head.
Yeah, it really is. People, we think about health and we just think about the physical health portion of our body. And really, the mental health portion is even more and more important as we're finding out so many more things going on in our brains. I mean, talk about Alzheimer's, talk about depression, talk about whatever you want. The brain is so important, and we're starting to learn more and more about it. Before, we used to have terrible medications for depression. Now we have great medications for depression. Now, you have to make sure we get you on the right one at the right dose. But at least it changes, like you said, the quality of your life. People want to get up and go to work. They want to interact socially. They want to do all those things that make for a worthful life.
There's nothing wrong with you. It's not your fault, but you do have to take some action. And again, I would encourage anybody that loves somebody that's going through this, as frustrating as it can be, just listen. Ask questions and just listen. And those questions are questions like, why are you so sad? What's going on? Talk to me about this because I want to help. And then, you know, find those resources for them. Get online for them. In a lot of cases, maybe they don't have energy to even go online and look. So last question for you, Doc. How do you find a therapist?
Yeah, it's a great question, you know, and really it comes down to talk to your family doctor, talk to your internist. They usually have great relationships with psychiatrists and psychologists that they know and they understand, and let them handpick it. Because not only is the medication important to be handpicked, as is the psychiatrist or psychologist. I get asked all the time, and I say, okay, well, tell me what it is. It's my daughter. She's this is how old she is, and this is what she's going through. I'm going to handpick somebody that I know works great with young females. Right. And it really comes down to let your doctor help you get the right person, because you might go to somebody and say, gosh, I had a terrible experience with that person, just like some people do with any doctor. But let your doctor handpick the right individual to make sure that it's successful.
And every doctor will tell you that if there's not a match, you should continue to look. And if you're not connecting with somebody, doctors should be, and in most cases I've found, are professional enough to say, I'm sorry, we didn't click, but here's somebody I think you ought to call. And it's a colleague, and you can go through it that way.
Yep, and probably the most important thing, Steve, that I hope people heard was what you were saying. If you see somebody, if you have a friend, a family member that are showing these symptoms, you are the person that's going to need to help them. Because often, like I said, they get in the doctor's office and we won't even know unless they're in a hypermanic state or in their depressive state. And they can fake that for 15 minutes. So really important that occurs, because you're going to not only increase their quality of life, but also you might save their lives.
No question about it. Again, RebeccasDream.org, a great resource. There are many, but I would highly recommend you take a look at that as well. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Thank you, Dr. Kevin Most.
You got it, man. Take care.
News next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Should have seen the look on Mrs. Carlson's face when he said, it's a keeper. Oh, cold enough for you?
Shut up, fat ass.
Back in the 90s when we shot Grumpy Old Men in Minnesota, it was 3 degrees warmer than it is today.
Oh, great.
It's 7:15, continuing this health discussion this morning in light of what Dr. Most is talking about and also what Barbara Bush is going through. Randy Balasomo's here. It's always nice to see you, and I think most people know this, but when you're not on TV, you do an awful lot of work to try to make others healthy, and that's a good thing. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you again. All right, so let's talk about an event that you want people to know about, then we'll get into the nitty-gritty. What's coming up?
Sure. Today, April 16th, is National Healthcare Decisions Day. It's traditionally held the day after our tax filing deadline, to go on what Benjamin Franklin said about life's two certainties, death and taxes. Mm-hmm. They're coupled together. I am late in getting my extension off, so I'm not the best example of
planning. I got mine off
ahead.
This weekend. Did I was you? Early. I got my extension out early. Normally, it's on
early.
Tax day.
Early
I'm
on the delay.
My extension in.
Yeah, hopefully, that will happen today if somebody else will take care of it, because today, today is the big day when we're asked to think about our future care decisions, as you said, something like what Barbara Bush is going through, not opting for further intensive treatment, but getting comfort care at home. And so that's why that's what our organization is sponsoring today. And we're having a big, giant project at the Thompson Center that I can tell you about. We're having, and instead of, to make this whole process less daunting and a little more palatable, we're having live action artists making a giant mural in the 17-story atrium of the Thompson Center based on the public, Chicago's responses to the question, what does living well mean to you? Instead of how you want to die, we're going to talk about how you want to live.
Wow.
And based on what folks say, they are going to depict that graphically to have a
a beautiful image of all our hopes and wishes for our future care.
Randy, you started Life Matters Media at a very young age. It's a wonderful company, corporation. Now, Mayor Emanuel is going to introduce an ordinance this month at the city council meeting, encouraging residents to plan through so many of these efforts. Talk about some of these efforts, things that you had to deal with, you might not know that you have to deal with, and why you should do this at a young age.
Right. We asked the mayor for his support in NHTD, and that was an easy thing for him to do. As you know, his brother is involved in end-of-life care, Zeke Emanuel, also the architect of the Affordable Care Act, and so we're happy that he issued a proclamation to do this. The issues are this. If by letting your family know what your care wishes are ahead of time, it is shown to reduce everybody's burden. If anybody's gone through the heart-wrenching process of trying to decide what mom or dad wants for their health care, and mom and dad can't communicate, and you don't know, that stuff that can really just tear a family apart on the inside and out. It's also the best way to get the care that we want. People don't know that CPR is the only thing that that paramedics will do to you that you don't have to consent for, right? But you can opt out of it. And so that's why we're asking for people to state their wishes today on April 16th, and hopefully by doing it in a fun and engaging way over at the Thompson Center.
Yeah, because it's a combination of great life decisions you need to make, but also, as you said, celebrating how to live your life, which is the big deal. Now, your organization is lifemattersmedia.org, right?
Right, and all the details of where these murals, we're having murals tomorrow and Wednesday, too, in different locations, so everybody can come out.
Where'd you find all these artists?
They're great. One of our artists is a pediatrician who was an artist first, and he is he knows that this is important, and he's got his team together of live. They're live action performers, and so there's music and video and a performative element to do. So even if you don't want to share your wishes for living well, I think the creation of this mural is going to be something to see. And we got to figure out what we're going to do with this huge piece of art after we're done, because it's going to be bigger than our offices.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Going to hang it at Channel 9.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe so, or maybe over here in the studio. I think it's going to be a cool day. Tomorrow we're going to be at Northwestern at Sulzer Library, and Wednesday we're going to be down in the Chatham area where people know I was yesterday watching the 95th Street Station open.
Look at you. You're on tour.
Oh, yeah. We're on tour. We're on tour, on the end-of-life tour, but hopefully we got many years ahead.
But you know what? Your wit and your humor, I mean, because when you go through this, you have to almost find, you know, a little bit of
dark
laughter
humor
in it. Exactly.
Right.
You really do, right, Randy? Because there's things that you don't know. I mean, you know, at 30 years old or 40 years old or 50 years old, whatever it might be, closing down a social media site or listing mm-hmm. beneficiaries. Do you go to the website? Do you have to get a lawyer? Just little questions like that turn out to be big deals.
Right, and I think that if there's one thing that I'm glad about is people feel like walking down Michigan Avenue, people can stop me and talk about their end-of-life questions, and they know that it doesn't surprise or shock me, and I'm there. Our team is there to do this kind of stuff, and we've been through it. And people who have been through that kind of trauma of not knowing what to do and the shock and all of those things, hopefully we can laugh about it later and help somebody else.
Well, yeah, and having lost your husband, being a kid that kicked you into this phase of your life to do all the good that you're doing, when people come up and recognize you, they may feel funny about bringing that up, but you're great about talking about it.
Oh, right. And hopefully by now people find it comfortable to bring it up, because I can't talk about it. That's what my message to everybody is. Have a conversation now, and not just about your care wishes, but in the process of doing so, you really get to know each other better. You get to know your mom and dad. What do they care about? What do they like? How do they want to spend their time? Think about how you want to spend your time, and you could have that time together now.
I'm trying to get Dave to get his affairs in order and make sure I'm named.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you are. Yes. Believe me, you're named.
The WGN money.
Yeah.
All right.
So. You're redacted. You're like with the black marker with the Sharpie, your name.
Cochran.
Now, is there a legal piece of this we need to be aware of? In other words, a living will is a legal document?
There are advance directives, and too often people emphasize the advance directive when you're planning for your future care. We think that's the last step. That's just a documentation of a conversation you've already had. If you do anything today, talk to your loved ones about how you want to live. If you do two things today, you can fill out a power of attorney for health care form and make that legal. But you don't need an attorney. Don't spend $500 doing this. It's valid upon two signatures. I run into people who don't have the money to spend going to attorneys to take care of this. Stop. And if you have any questions, go to our website or call me. I'll save you some money.
You can literally write it out on a legal pad.
If you got two signatures. Doctors, paramedics, they want to know what your wishes are.
Right.
Most often, they're not going to fire and distrust the document itself, because everybody wants to know, so make it clear.
Right.
Again, for information, and speaking of great resources, we were last half hour, this is a great one as well. What's your website?
LifeMattersMedia.org, and you can follow us on Twitter today, LifeMedia, and see the art be created.
Oh, nice. Very
That's cool. Yeah, go to the Townsend Center today. See the mural.
Yeah, and mural. It says obviously a slow day for you, so thanks for swinging
by. Can I go miss the snowflakes today?
There you go. Thank you, Randy.
See ya.
And
thanks.
See Randy Bellisoma on Channel 9, obviously.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I'll play a couple of clips from the Comey Stephanopoulos interview last night, but he's awake. President Trump's first tweet of the day. Comey drafted the crooked Hillary exoneration long before he talked to her, parentheses, lied in Congress to Senator G, which I believe is Lindsey Graham, then based his decisions on her poll numbers. Disgruntled, he, McCabe, that was the number two at the FBI, and the others committed many crimes. Okay. Mr. President, have some sausage, bacon, eggs, relax, take a deep breath. And listen to this, Comey and Stephanopoulos last night. This is not the first time this comparison has been made, and this could be the core to whatever happens to Donald Trump, those around him, and his presidency as well. But this also shows, I think, a real stark contradiction in some of the things that James Comey said, which are important to bring up as well. Here's a clip.
There's a distinction between a friend of yours and a friend of ours. I felt this effort to make us all, and maybe this wasn't their intention, but it's the way it felt to me, to make us all a Mica Nostra. We're all part of the messaging. We're all part of the effort. The boss is at the head of the table, and we're going to figure out together how to do this.
How strange is it for you to sit here and compare the president to a mob boss?
Very strange. And I don't do it lightly. And I'm not trying to, by that, by the way, suggest that President Trump is out breaking legs and shaking down shopkeepers. But instead, what I'm talking about is that leadership culture constantly comes back to me when I think about my experience with the Trump administration.
Do you think you should have said something then?
Maybe.
Old dog, new tricks is what comes to mind with this. President Trump's 71. He'll be 72 soon, right? April birthday? May? I forget. I know I got to get him something. But the point being, you don't change your ways when you get to a certain age in a dramatic fashion. When's his birthday?
June 14th.
June 14th, like I said, April. Mm-hmm. So to assume the president would be different than he was when he was Donald Trump in the 80s and 90s and 2000s is a stretch. I certainly thought and hoped, and I think most of you probably did as well, that when he got into the White House and started to understand the weight of the job, that he would adjust. I certainly don't believe he has. So while the comparison is pretty stark, if you read and absorb any of the legitimate writers who have written biographies about Trump, patterns appear over and over again that have appeared while he's been president. And, of course, the core of that, the lying constantly. Now, when it comes to the Comey part of this, in comparing Trump to the mob, there's a notion that Comey has had some pretty valuable experience before he was named to his position. You don't get to be head of the FBI without knowing what you're doing, without chasing bad guys before. So if he is as strong as he needs to be the head of the FBI, and I believe he was, how is it possible that he didn't have the stones in the moment, and I don't mean the Rolling Stones, to say to Donald Trump, I can't be in here with you alone. I can't stand here with you alone. It's completely inappropriate. Mr. President, you may not be aware of this because you're new to this job, new to this position, but the head of the FBI cannot take directions and requests on loyalty from the President of the United States. That's not how this works. And he absolutely should have said it. And even after watching the interview last night, I don't know why he didn't.
I don't know.
I'm not saying he's lying, but I don't know where that kind of weakness would have come from a guy who's been through what he's gone through.
And the positions that he's held, absolutely.
So, more clips to come. Let's take a break, and the headlines are next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. I've been
stuck in 743. By the way, I thought Stephanopoulos did a great job in the interview. And I tweeted this out several times, but that's what real news is. That's what real reporters do, journalists. I don't care that he worked for Clinton in the 90s. He's been doing TV forever.
Right.
You ask the tough questions about both sides.
Mm-hmm. And good follow-ups, too.
Yeah, yeah. Meanwhile, a place the president quotes occasionally, Alex Jones on InfoWars, who shouldn't get the time of day, was melting down crying online and losing it. There's a difference between real news and what we know to be fake news. And real news needs to be celebrated. And I thought Stephanopoulos did a great job. 743. We have a dispute here in studio before we get to Mayor Emanuel here in a couple minutes. And that is there are team building exercises that go on here all the time, led by Stephanie Menendez. I don't even know Steph's title. Do you?
She's our news operations director. Yes.
Operations director.
We also call her girl boss occasionally.
Girl boss. Okay. Yep. Yeah. So what is Todd Manley? Boy boss?
Mr. Manley, actually.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So amongst the team building activities was an archery thing on Friday.
Yes.
So
yes.
Where did you go to shoot bows and arrows?
We went to Chicago Archery in Elmhurst, and we had different teams. It was myself and Stephanie and Sarah from our web design department against Dave Ennett, Ryan Burrow.
What do you mean against? How do you score?
You have to shoot each other with these arrows.
So if you get hit, it's a point?
Well, if you get hit, you're out.
Yeah.
So it's dodge arrows.
You try to get,
it's like dodgeball. It's dodge
arrows. Trying to get all the other players out.
Yes, yeah, so you got to be the last person standing.
Yeah.
And you shot one from across the room and apparently hit Dave and his little Dave.
No, here's the thing. I shot toward Dave, and it was, I think, the first or second time. Because, you know, they teach you how to do this. And mm-hmm. I should preface it by saying
they have foam tips.
Yeah, there's foam tips on the
end. They're like Nerf arrows.
Exactly. So it doesn't hurt unless you really get kind of some...
Well, if you get hit in the little Dave, it hurts.
But it wasn't the little Dave. It was. I thought it was the stomach because I didn't even think it was going to hit you, Dave. I swear, I just aimed toward you, and I didn't think I was going to be spot on with the first hit.
You guys are lucky Mayor Emanuel's on the phone.
I was going to say...
I love you, Dave. You know,
we're out of time to discuss this.
Yeah, but it sounds like an HR problem to me.
Yeah, it does. Me too.
At 7:45, Mayor Emanuel joins us now from wherever in the world he is this morning. Good morning, Mr. Mayor. How are you?
Hey, good. I'm a little nervous being on the show.
Really?
Before I got buzzed, right before I got buzzed on, I heard that you should refer that to HR, and that's a Me Too problem. I don't want to be part of that.
Yeah, none of this relates.
Can I call back next week?
None of this relates to city business.
Okay.
This is all a problem within the Tribune Tower. You know, listen, I love it.
That's only what, from what I can read, that's only one of many problems.
Yeah, there's a few. Listen, I love it when you get a chance to tout the city that we love, but honestly, can't you do something about this weather?
Is there something going on that I don't know about?
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know. There's a certain, you gotta live the moment, see? There's a certain charm to this, because when it passes, we're like, you know, we're going to come out of hibernation. But I'm with you, man. Enough already.
Yeah, enough. It's got to be over. It's got to be over. You know what? Maybe call Skilling.
Thank God we're not Minnesota.
Yeah, where they got a foot. But maybe call Skilling and threaten him, because we know that Tom controls the weather with his Tom Skilling weather machine.
He's got his little dial. Get your hand off that dial.
Right.
So right now.
All right, so tell people about the fact that we could be a two-front water city, a river city.
Yeah. Well, we've always had our front. You know, our front yards, our lake, it's gorgeous, it's beautiful. I'm going to announce we're finishing, obviously, the bike and running path the whole distance and the flyover. That's all going to be ready by the end of this year. But we never really embraced the river as for obvious reasons. It was for industry. And I now said in 2011, let's make the river a park. And we have added, we've gotten about 5.5 miles of frontage now on the river, parkland, open access, and we're going to add double it. And we're going to be from boathouses for kayaking, canoeing, the river walk. We're going to extend the river walk from State Street east to the lake. It's going to be river walk east, and we're going to do a rebuild there, which I'll talk about. And then all the other parts of the city, one of the exciting parts in our neighborhoods is what I call 312 River Run. And that's in the Irving Park and Avondale neighborhood. It's going to have a running bike bridge from the east side of the river to the west side, and then we're going to fix up Horner and California Park, so we add an ice skating rink, fix up the tennis courts, two soccer pitches, fix the baseball, and it's going to be three parts, one bridge, 2 miles long, and you'll have the best of the 606 and the best of the Riverwalk all there. But throughout the neighborhoods and communities, we're building different parks and making public access to literally run, stroll, bike along the river and have a waterfront on our, that's the spine of our neighborhoods in our city, just like the lakefront, and really make the river the park that it was a vision. That's why it's part of the Building on Burnham plan that I outlined 2 years ago.
Mayor, love how it's already been expanded from Columbus to About State right now with the new restaurants and the city winery, and that's wonderful. There's also talk about maybe putting gondolas in there, so a little bit of...
I'm going to look great in the outfit.
Not the gondolas in the water, but kind of like a, you know, in the air. So, you know, when you go to, Summerfest?
There are some people talking about that. We'll have a discussion of that, and that's another big idea. It has a... Certain people like it, other people don't like it, but that doesn't stop us from building another 5 miles of public access for canoeing and kayaking, enjoyment in the evenings with entertainment and drink. So that's a longer-term piece. I'm trying to talk about what we're going to do over the next 5 years, because the original Burnham plan talked about these two waterfronts as part of the city. We've never really exercised one, and in the last 5 years really have made it an integral part of the city. I mean, literally, we had the river was almost a separate entity from the city. We're now integrating it, consistent, I think, at least, with the original plan by Burnham.
And again, state to the lake, that's a big deal. That's a serious commitment.
Can I say, so the Riverwalk cost us zero, and it's produced billions of dollars of investment, thousands of jobs, and we now have the resources. We're going to go back east, what I call Riverwalk East, and really make it, clean it up, make it a nicer part, and so you have the entire mile rather than just six blocks of Riverwalk. And then I can't stress enough the Paseo down in the Pilsen Little Village area, what we've done in other parts, the Burley Stone Park all the way north. But everybody's coming back to the water, and we're going to go from one waterfront city to a two waterfront city and make these integral to the vitality and economic growth of the city and the neighborhood growth, which is what I'm excited about.
And you're announcing all this where and when today?
11 o'clock at SF Tennis Facility in Washington Park on the south side. That's the first of five student sports centers. It's all part, you know, we've added, we're up to about 1,900 acres of nature preserve in the city. And I set a goal of 2020, we'll have 2,020 acres, and we're well on our way. Five student sports centers like SS Tennis, where you'll have tennis, you'll have workout, you'll have nutrition, you'll have mentoring programs, homework help. So all in one place, helping our kids be what I call students and sports together.
Very cool.
We'll have five of those across the city.
Hey, I don't know if you remember this. Last time we were in, I was talking about, remember when the President Obama did the beer summit? You remember? Yeah. So.
You want one for Comey and Trump?
No. I was going to suggest you and McCarthy, but I still want to get you and the governor together.
I think you may need more than just beer. It may have to be hard liquor.
So, in other words, you're open to it.
I'm trying to help him. The guy can't get out of his own way. So I try to help him.
And will there be any debates with you and McCarthy, or is it too early?
First and foremost, we have an election in November, and that's the most important election because for the city. We need a governor who's a partner with the city because we're the economic engine, not one who runs down the city and is trying to hurt the city. And that's if you're going to be mayor, you have to have a vision of the city. It's one of the things I'm trying to outline today. And more importantly, we need a governor who wants to partner with the city in growth and jobs. We're the vital center for the state. And we've had 4 years of somebody turning around us now. And so I'm very interested in that election. And then there'll be plenty of time to talk about and lay out the vision of the city.
All right. Time.
When that comes, that will come.
Time will tell and time will come. All we need...
I'll, I want you to know Amy's happy we're doing this on the telephone because she said she doesn't really believe that you're part of eating all the vegetables that I bring. They get soft when I leave.
He did, though. He
let me tell you something.
You ate those tomatoes.
You got something to prove to the missus.
Oh. Well, I can tell you now that I'm willing to do the standard weigh-ins in your yard that you suggested a long time ago.
We are so ready to help you kind of. I think we should do a live podcast or show or a YouTube and just a view coming and Amy walking you through the garden.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
In the front of the house on the news, why don't we show you the back of the house?
You know, it's funny, the idea that the mayor would ever let me on his property.
Right.
Mayor Emanuel, thank you. Congratulations on this. It's a great two waterfront announcement. It'll happen later today. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
There you go. That's Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And we got to get him a better phone.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know the city is strapped for cash. And, you know, you're trying to do the best to spread the money around as much as possible. But I think he won that one when his Sports Illustrated subscription was paid up. That may have been a football phone.
Yeah, we had better communications with the moon when the Apollo spacecraft were there.
Yeah, it's true. So, yeah. Next time, better phone. All right, White Sox tickets. We're going to do a little 2005 World Series trivia with Super Joe, the White Sox fan, coming up in about 40 minutes. Dean, after the news, that's next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Morning after the Country Music Awards.
Are the ACMs and the CMAs different?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The ACMs, the CMAs, the CMTs, they're always the best award shows because they have performances that always kick butt.
They did have good performances last night, that's for sure.
Stephanopoulos sang, but nobody was watching that.
That's what everybody was watching last night. The ratings that came in are enormous for the Comey interview last night. So, I mean, that's significant.
What do we know? How big?
From last night?
Like a bazillion people?
It really is. It's a remarkable number. I saw them earlier. I don't have the exact numbers here in front of me, but they are massive. Numbers, which I find really interesting. You know, people, you know, so interested to hear the other side of the story. Are they Trump supporters watching? I don't know. Are they Hillary supporters?
Well, we know that 35 to 40% of the country is supporting Donald Trump, and the rest aren't.
Yeah.
And if it's a fat number, it's probably 60% of those people that watched don't, and you know, the 35 to 40% do. I bet it's very similar.
I bet it's because most people think George is cute.
He's tiny. You can fit him in your hand.
I think it's because people are fans
George.
Of Russian videos.
Not those. We should never be able to see those. I feel like Phoebe from that old Friends episode. My eyes!
You know, it's interesting about those Russian videos. If you open the DVD case, there's a little smaller DVD case inside.
Right.
And then a smaller one inside that.
Nesting DVD cases.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. All right. So, Sandberg's a huge country music fan. What's your favorite part of the awards?
My favorite part?
Yeah.
I think my favorite performance was Kelly Clarkson and Reba McEntire. They celebrated number one hits from 25 years ago, so 1993. I was a junior in high school and a big country music fan, so all these songs really resonate with me.
So you did a medley from 93?
Not a medley. They did like five different songs from 1993, and people performed them with the original person.
Well, they're both incredibly likable people.
She wasn't dressed like the Colonel, was she?
No, she wasn't, but Reba was wearing the dress that she wore in the video 25 years ago.
Isn't that weird that 1993 is a retro?
Yeah, it's very weird.
Doesn't that just
gets weirder
like
every day?
Yesterday,
Kane Brown and Lauren Elena, they were amazing. The What Ifs.
I loved Carrie Underwood's performance last night.
She looked, I liked how she did the glittery tears on her cheeks.
Right.
Oh, is that why people couldn't see the scar? Because she put some funky
tears
on?
I'm not sure. I don't know where the...
She fell. Carrie Underwood fell at her house or something a couple of months ago and supposedly had a scar. And the internet...
She had 50 stitches.
Yeah, 40 to 50 stitches.
So yeah, the internet, because the internet sucks, was disappointed they couldn't see a scar.
Yeah.
Also, the way that she had her hair, I think, you know, was kind of strategically placed also. But good for her for getting on a big stage like
that. Can you imagine, Dean, if you or I ever had 50 stitches? We couldn't hide it anywhere.
Well, this guy got nothing.
And, Dean, I don't know about you, but I was glued to Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani are right there in the front. Miranda Lambert, who just broke up with her her boyfriend, mm-hmm. She's right there. They both perform multiple times. I know. Gwen singing along to the country song is always fun to watch, so that's some extra side.
Did you miss that?
Yeah, she's a terrible person. I don't know if you know that. She's a terrible person.
You didn't DVR that part?
When she leaned over and said, "Excuse me, Gwen, would you like some milk duds?"
And I don't know what Drew Brees did, if he paid somebody, but he was on camera, he and his wife, the entire show. Dave, you were watching, weren't you?
Yes. What's their connection to this?
They were there. I don't know.
God, they never really explained that. They introduced one of the acts.
Yeah,
early.
I'm not sure why Drew Brees is.
I've been to the ACMs and the CMAs and the CMTs. The CMT is a smaller version of those, but they're all good.
Yeah, it was. And when Darius Rucker sang, you know how they bring up a crowd sometimes to like cheer for you? It was all people that were 45 and older.
Yeah, it was all choreographed.
Hootie fans.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, if you get a bunch of 45 and older people up at one time, they had to have been warned ahead of time.
Yeah.
That was the sound that you heard getting out of the chair.
It was funny. So.
Also, just as a side note, at the ACMs, the winners of the actual awards, Jason Aldean won Entertainer of the Year. Mm-hmm. Chris Stapleton won Album of the Year.
Didn't he just have twins?
It was his birthday.
That day.
Oh, so what a big day.
Yeah, and he won 3 awards last night, and so did the much-beloved Miranda Lambert, also won 3 awards.
You know, not that you'd want to leave the house after your baby's born, but no dad's getting a pass like that. Hey, honey, I know you just popped a couple of twins. I'm going to swing by the party.
They came a little early. They also did, you said Jason Aldean won, they did an awesome tribute to the victims.
Vegas victims, yeah.
It was really.
And here we are, 6 months later, we still don't know a motive. That's unbelievable. It's crazy. That's the little wrap-up of the ACMs. We get to the music of my people. I'm talking about Beyonce at Coachella. Justin Bieber's in the news. Arlie Ermey died this weekend. We'll talk about that in a second as well. And some Hamilton stuff, some Kevin Hart stuff coming up with Dean.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
Sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center. Back to Dean. Arlie Ermey died. Did you ever meet him? I never did.
I did. We've had him on the show a couple of times. And pretty much the way he was on screen is how he was in real life.
Did he call you names? Did he call you a little puke or a little snot or anything like that?
He did. Made me drop to the floor and do push-ups.
Right.
In real life, he was... Arlie Ermey was the hard-nosed drill sergeant from the movie Full Metal Jacket, in case people...
And many other movie and television show appearances.
Yeah. But in real life, was a Vietnam veteran, was in the Marines for 11 years... 2 years as a drill instructor, rose to the rank of staff sergeant and then gunnery sergeant after his military career, then went into movies and TV and commercials and so forth. Golden Globe nominated, died of complications of pneumonia, only 74 years old.
Arlie Ermey from Saving Silverman. Listen.
How'd you do it?
We
ate her. You ate her?
Yeah, we ate her alive.
My hat goes off to you. You boys are smart. That's the perfect crime. Wonder what's on the tube.
What a voice.
What a voice. What a movie. What'd Justin Bieber do?
Well, you know, Coachella, the first weekend of Coachella.
Yeah, I was there with Bay. Come get it, Bay. Come get it, Bay.
He means Michael Bay.
Apparently.
The weekend headlined the first night.
Bad haircut.
And then on Sunday night, it was Eminem.
Mm-hmm.
But Saturday night was the big night where Bey, Beyonce,
come get it, Bey,
did a 2.5 hour set that included a Destiny's Child reunion. Her husband, Mr. Bey, also appeared, and her sister Solange.
She crushed it.
Appeared. She brought marching bands on. I mean, it was huge and big because she had to cancel it last year. Apparently, some people think when you're pregnant with twins, you can't do a full concert, so she canceled out last year.
Baby.
So that happened. The other big highlight of the weekend: Justin Bieber punched a guy.
Now, this is apparently a guy who slapped the woman he was with or something?
He was, Bieber and Patrick Schwarzenegger were hanging at a party together. And
well, of course they were. Why wouldn't they be?
Some guy comes into the party who witnesses, sources say, appeared to be under the influence of something, grabbed a woman by the neck and was like holding her up against the wall. Bieber, to the rescue, comes over, punches the guy in the face.
Good for him.
Is pushing the guy and gets this guy off of the woman. Woman gets away. Eventually, this guy gets arrested. But, hey, good for Bieber. All of his crazy shenanigans through the years and temper tantrums finally paid off for something good.
I understand there was a huge scuffle right outside the party entrance, too, where lawyers were trying to get to the guy to sue Bieber. A bunch of lawyers roughing each other up.
That could happen.
So, the star of Hamilton is doing a very cool thing. Tell everybody about it.
I love this.
One of the stars of Hamilton.
Well, he is the star of Hamilton. He's Miguel Cervantes, who plays Alexander Hamilton.
Is that Anabalaval?
That's Anabalaval doing the soundtrack.
Anabalaval can sing the entire soundtrack.
You know, Dean, she's not going to miss her shot.
What's your name, boy?
Yeah. Yeah. Tell her it's just loud enough to be annoying.
You read it, and I'll
Steve,
sing it.
Steve said it's just loud enough to be annoying.
No, I'll sing it as a nap sound.
Oh, well, I do. This is like the background music.
Oh, that's right. Okay, okay, okay.
So, Miguel Cervantes. He and his wife, Kelly, have two kids. They have a little boy. He's probably about 5, 7 years old now, something like that. But they also have a 2-year-old daughter who pretty much since birth has suffered a very rare form of childhood epilepsy. And they have gone to every hospital. Part of the reason that he wanted to do Hamilton here is so he could avail the medical services at our great medical centers that we have.
World renowned.
Here in Chicago. So that's part of the deal. But he's involved in every benefit that there is for epilepsy. On Friday, a coffee shop in Bucktown, which has locations downtown and in other cities, Fairgrounds Coffee, named a coffee blend after Little Adelaide. And it sold out instantly. Proceeds go to CURE, an organization that works for awareness and research for epilepsy research. So to accept this, Miguel did a little mini performance at Fairgrounds Coffee on Milwaukee Avenue. And I talked to him about how Little Adelaide is doing.
Her form of infantile spasm sort of, and that when she's no longer an infant, it sort of morphs into a different type of seizure. And, you know, like 30% of all the folks, she's resistant to all the drugs and they're not helping. Wow. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing this. You know, we are looking at our daughter and wondering what is going to happen. And that's our daily struggle.
You're also coaching your son's little league team?
Yeah, you know, I'm integrating myself into the Chicago community.
You are big time. If you're on a little league field.
Yeah, his games are going to be before my two shows on Saturday. So
that's crazy.
I'll try not to yell too loud, you know. I'll be here
with my story. So how about that?
That's great.
He does every benefit there
He's like a heck of a dad.
He's coaching little league baseball. His wife, Kelly, couldn't be more lovely. Little Adelaide was there, also there at the coffee shop. And, you know, he says we're taking it day by day. So, you know,
God bless him.
Our hearts go
out
to him.
God bless him. All right, last word here. Kevin Hart was drunk at the Super Bowl and tried to get up on stage. Kevin's a small fella, and a giant bouncer turned him away.
Yep.
He's explaining it now?
Well, he was in Chicago for two shows at the United Center over the weekend, and I talked to him. And, you know, he explained that, but had no hesitation in saying that if he had to do it again, he would.
My whole goal was to try to get next to the Super Bowl trophy to take a picture. I'm so out of my mind. The Super Bowl trophy was behind me the whole time. That was the goal. The goal was to get to the trophy. It was behind. All I had to do was turn around.
Like all I had to do was turn around.
I'm so gone in my own world. My wife was yelling, "What are you doing? Just relax. I know what I'm doing. You wait over there. I got it. This is a moment for me and the city." In my mind, the city wanted to see me up there.
So we can look for a repeat of that then. You know what, 76ers go all the way.
If I could do it all over again, I would. I don't have too many days off, and Super Bowl weekend was one of the few. And having all my friends with Philadelphia with me, I treated this all to a Super Bowl suite. I had a time in my life. And I'll tell you what, if the Sixers are in the finals, you're going to see the same thing.
You heard it here first.
You're going to see the same exact thing.
Completely unapologetic.
And there you go. He's planning on being drunk at a Sixers thing, hoping to find the trophy.
You got to kind of love that a little bit.
There you go. Tomorrow, Dean's back. We'll do it then.
I will be here, and we'll see what songs Anna can
Alexander
sing.
Alexander Hamilton.
See?
Come get it, B.
Waiting.
Come get it, B.
What?
You're finishing this segment with class because I'm giving you music.
Sound of Olival telling Dean how this works. It's 8:30, news next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This is exciting. I didn't think we'd be able to pull this off. Paul Coit is going to join us in just a second, live from London, with a Meghan Markle Prince Harry wedding update. You know, I almost called him on his birthday this year.
Paul. But you didn't?
Missed it by one day.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I was only one day late. Normally, it's like a month late. I was only one day late.
Just blame the time difference.
I did. Yeah, I said when it's Tuesday here, it's Wednesday there, right? Isn't that how it works?
Perfect.
So we'll get to Paul in just a second, but first let me go to Super Joe. Super Joe, I have in my hand 4 tickets to the White Sox versus Houston.
Can I have them?
No. It is Saturday at 6:10. What's the temperature going to be Saturday? Livable? 50?
50s.
Okay. Let's see.
50s. Going to feel like 90.
51, allegedly.
That's 50s.
Yep.
Allegedly.
Saturday, 6:10 p.m. Tune in every Monday between 8:30 and 9. We'll give you White Sox tickets all season long. How about that?
That's pretty sweet.
It's good. 4 tickets for the game. Let's do 2005 World Series trivia. Wait till 2005. Ask the question, and we'll get the answer. Caller 7 when you can answer this question from Super Joe.
So this weekend they are playing the Houston Astros, and that is the team that they face in the 2005 World
Swept
Series.
Swept them!
Who was the World Series MVP?
Who was the World Series MVP in 2005? First correct caller? No, seventh correct caller. No, start with caller 7. Start with caller 7. First correct answer starting with caller 7. Okay? Dave, I know you know.
Okay.
You're just chomping at the bit to say the answer. I know you know. You can't win.
Okay.
844, my friend Paul Coit joins us live from London. Hi, buddy.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm fine. Were you surprised that I only called you one day late for your birthday this year?
Yeah, I was. I was really impressed. It was lovely. But unfortunately, what you failed to mention is that that call was actually for the year before. So it was actually more than, it was a year and a day.
Oh, it was a year and a day.
I really appreciated it. Mm. It's okay, though. I appreciate it always.
That's just
I got you, though, didn't I? Did I get you in time? I think I did.
Yeah, I think you did, actually.
Sent you a text, didn't I?
Okay. Yeah, no, I think you did. Listen, we're dudes. Dudes, you know, we're dudes. Yeah. That's all. Hey, how's this Trump presidency playing in the U.K.?
It's playing pretty much the same as it was, strangely and confusingly, and if it wasn't so scary, somewhat entertainingly.
yeah, it's just not that funny anymore. Is he going to get a royal wedding invite for Harry and Meghan Markle?
No, there's probably zero chance. In fact, less than zero chance. I say there's absolutely no chance whatsoever. There's more chance that you and me will be invited to give her away at the wedding, probably, than Donald Trump will have as an invite going there.
I think Paul and I should walk her down the aisle.
Why don't you officiate? Steve's an ordained minister. You could always do the ceremony.
I could do the ceremony.
What does ordained mean exactly? What is the ordained part? Does that mean...
Well, ordained means you're Danish... So it means you are either who you thought you were or you're Danish.
I see.
Yeah, ordained.
I love those Danish weddings.
Yes.
I do know, and I know this is going slightly off, but I know you'd appreciate it. The only phrase in Danish that I know, and this is absolutely correct, is Unskil jeviste ega adividin venida.
I know what that means. Do you know what that means? I know what that means. It means,
you know, what that means?
Does this look infected?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't?
It's close, because you got the inflection slightly wrong. It actually means, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that was your girlfriend. Danish. And it's the only Danish I know. I've never had to use it, but I'm always hoping to.
Did you learn that on a trip to the Danes?
Yes, I did.
Thought so.
Exactly right.
Thought so. Yeah. Perfectly prepared. Yeah, where did you go? Were you in Holland, the Netherlands? Where were you?
No, I was in
Denmark.
I was in Copenhagen, which some people call Copenhagen purely because of the beautiful Danny Kaye film, Hans Christian Andersen, because he only sung the words Copenhagen because it fitted in with the song better. So people still say, I'm going to Copenhagen, where it's actually Copenhagen. That's Danny Kaye's fault.
And by the way, I misspoke, because the Danes are obviously from Denmark, the same way the Halls are from Holland, and the Neths are from the Netherlands. Yeah.
That's correct. That's why I try to skip over and not highlight that horrendous geographical error.
Sure. Dave from North Aurora just won the White Sox tickets every Monday between 8:30 and 9. We'll do that. The correct answer, Dave, for MVP from the 2005 series was?
Jermaine Dye.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Friend of the show. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get back to this wedding. Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, whom is going to show up at this wedding? Is this a big shot celebrity affair?
The thing is, it's all going to be friends, because usually at royal weddings, what they do is have, like you say, they're heads of state and people from, but he's sixth in line to the throne. So it doesn't matter. So you can break royal tradition. It's also royal tradition, the fact that it usually would be during a weekday, whereas it's Saturday, same day as FA Cup final day, which is a big soccer day, which is kind of strange, considering that his brother is the head of the Football Association, so would have to be at the FA Cup final. So whether he's going to do both, I don't know. But as far as big names, I don't know, probably the only big chance is probably who's going to be her bridesmaids. Isn't it like Serena Williams being rumored? I mean, are they friends or so? I don't even know that. Did you know that?
I wasn't aware of that, but you know, the Kardashians are always available.
Well, you know what? At a push, they've got to have a name, because obviously they've got to sell the pictures to OK Magazine or something. So there's going to be a splattering of celebrities, but you know, nothing major. There's nothing really that I'm hearing, to be honest with you.
And will the Queen be there to do the chicken dance?
Yeah, she'll be there. Yeah. Well, what is the chicken dance exactly?
The chicken dance is this. Na 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 na
na na na. That's the birdie dance.
Oh, it's called the birdie dance.
Yeah.
It sounds better. Sounds better when you say it.
The birdie dance. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know why it's changed names from chicken to birdie. I don't know, but it was the birdie dance. It was actually a hit record over here, embarrassingly.
That is embarrassing. No, that is embarrassing.
It is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What other traditions do you have? Do you have the dollar dance, where you pay a dollar to dance with the bride?
That's unbelievable. Is it like some kind of... Well, you have to pay. It's the bride. How insulting is that? Well, you come up and go, look, here's some money. Please, may I? I mean, you get a slap across
exactly
the face
right.
in this country.
No, it's
you
exactly.
know what that symbolizes. It's disgraceful.
It is true. Yeah.
That deal.
What is it like, sort of, oh, yeah, give me a dance here for a dollar? But then people go to bars for that sort of thing. You know, that's a bride.
It's not a she dollar for a holla. It's a dollar dance at the wedding. All right, what about taking the garter off the bride? And throwing of the flowers.
What is it, just filth weddings? Yeah. Here's a dollar. Come over and dance with me for a dollar, bride, and now take off your garter. What kind of things do you have here?
That's pretty nuts, isn't it? It's pretty crazy. What other traditions do we have?
Neither of those things.
Well, as you said, the tossing of the bouquet.
Yeah, tossing of the bouquet. Don't you do that?
See, I don't even think we do the tossing of the bouquet. See, that I know has come from your country. Well, is that where you lean, they just throw it, and whoever catches it is likely to be the next person that gets married? Is that right?
Right. Right. That's correct.
Yeah, all the single women are invited to try and catch it.
Does it work? Does it usually mean anything?
Usually not. No,
I don't think anybody tracks it.
Find their way, and then it happens?
No, it doesn't usually work out, Paul. I don't think anyway.
It does get a bit elbowy, though, doesn't it? Doesn't it get a bit violent, though? There's a lot of fights trying to catch the bouquet.
It's interesting that you say that. Depending on the age. Now, if I was younger, I think we would all try and run for it. Now that we're a little more mature in age, I think we just kind of watch it fall to the floor and watch the kids scramble after it.
What about if you're married? Are you allowed to take part in the scramble for that?
No,
or is
no.
it only single ladies?
It's single.
Yeah, okay. Just the single ladies.
The single ladies.
What about hitting the other partner in the face with the cake?
Oh, that's right.
That to me is awful.
Do you stuff the cake in each other's face? Do you do that where the bride and the groom stuff the cake in each other's face?
Mouth.
Are you having me on now?
No, I'm not. I'm telling you the truth. Do you stuff... They each get a piece of wedding cake first before anybody else.
And they're supposed to hand it to each other to bite. Like, I would feed
right,
you.
But you shove it in my face and I shove it in yours.
Yeah, but that would be like divorce immediately. For most women, I think.
Okay. For cake in the face. No, that doesn't happen in this country.
Okay. So do you have any traditions? What do you do at the wedding reception?
What do you do? Well, you sort of, they have the first dance, which I thought was really, I didn't do that because I thought it was just, I thought I'd break the tradition because I like to buck a trend, Steve, you know that. So we didn't do that. They just do the wedding and then just everybody gets drunk and she has a fight. And that's pretty much it for the end of the evening, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds a lot like ours. All right, before we run out of time, I have to ask you a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Last week, this came up, and I don't even remember how it came up, but we were talking about failing your road test. What do you call the driver's...
Driving test.
The driving test. But there's the...
Driving test.
All right, so what is the theory test? Is that the written part of the test?
Well, when I did it, you didn't have the theory test, whereas now you actually have to sit down and you answer some questions about what does this sign mean, what is the what's the speed limit here, and then you have to go through all that. And then you have the driving test where you sit, and I don't know whether they do the same thing there, where they go, right, when I put my hand on the front of the car, then slam it out, you've got to brake as quickly as you can, you've got to reverse round in a circle and all that sort of thing. Loads of things like that. So it's pretty much the same. Is that what you do?
We have a written test and then a road test. And the road test, I think you call the practical test. Is that right?
But I think we just call it a driving test, yeah.
All right, so there's a 30-year-old... So there was a reality star who had failed her test 13 times before she passed it. And I can't think of her name down, but she was one of your reality stars. But then I did a little digging, and the Daily Mail's reporting on a 30-year-old woman from Southwark, which is it's a suburb of London, isn't it?
Southwark.
She failed the practical test, the theory test, the written test, 113 times.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's the theory. Well, that's just the written bit.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So did she get to do the driving bit?
No, you got to pass the written to get
the written bit.
113. They also have information in this story about a 40-year-old man who failed the road test 34 times.
Oh my God,
it's unbelievable. There's got to be a point when you just think, you know what? I'm just going to stop. See, I don't know about you. What? When did you pass? Did you pass first time when you did it?
It's interesting that you ask him
good
that,
question,
Paul.
As far as you know,
Steve, what's your response?
As far
to Paul?
As you know, I did.
So here's the thing. Stop driving on the wrong side of the road. If you stop driving on the wrong side of the road, these people won't have these problems.
Well, this is the only reason we don't have a tunnel under the Atlantic Ocean, because once we meet in the middle, then where are we going to go?
Good point.
The tunnel.
That's my friend Paul Coit, live from London.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Each day, CLTV broadcasts the 9 o'clock hour. Hi to everybody over there. Who are we thanking over there that produces it?
We want to thank Fawn, our Fawn's producer, the best. And Megan and Jamie fill in for Fawn, but everybody, hi at CLTV.
Fawn getting it done. Between Fawn and Sandberg.
Oh, yeah.
They keep the ship in the water, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they do.
What?
Yeah,
what?
They do.
Yep.
And
what
they are
mean?
Both.
They keep the road between the cars.
And the oars in the water.
They keep the oars on the boat.
Yep.
And they are both so great, and they look good doing it, too.
And at the feet on the ground and keep reaching for the clutch.
What about one of those joint names like Fawnberg?
Ah!
You like that? The Fawnberg.
I don't think Sandberg would like being second in that. Either. I think that's a problem. San Fawn doesn't work either, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, nix the idea. It's just my
dog and me. This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Nine. 9:12. Hi, and welcome back. And again, hi to everybody on CLTV. Steve Dale's here. And Steve, your show is on Sunday mornings at what time?
It is at 6:30 on Sunday morning.
All right. Is this a good day for cats and dogs?
It is a great day for cats and dogs because we have one of the heroes of Chicago in studio who's been doing this for, what, 3 years?
Oh, 3 years, about 46.
She says 46 years.
46 years rescuing pets?
We have 46 pets, working with pets, handling them, grooming them, and rescuing them. As a yes.
46 years ago would have been, by my math, 1972.
That's about it. We were the ones in Chicago that started the first doggy deli and restaurant for dogs.
And I grew up near an ASPCA.
Oh, boy.
And the ASPCA used to go and volunteer there a little bit and help out. But people weren't pet crazy like they are now. What is the pet business? Multi-billions a year, Steve? What's
Yeah. It's. I mean, we spend more on companion animals, don't tell Manfredini this, than we do on hardware in America.
I'm not surprised.
You know, so we care about our pets. And there are more pets than children right now in this country,
and
actually.
They pant like this little one.
You can hear it, I think.
Who you got there with you?
We have Bella. She's a little Chiweenie. She's probably Chihuahua.
Chiweenie.
What's a Chiweenie?
Sounds chewable.
Chihuahua and Dachshund, maybe, but we're not sure about the second part. She's just scared and nervous today. She
Why are you scared there, little dude?
Big car ride down here in the carrying case.
What's her history?
Well, unfortunately, Bella was a stray, and she had no microchip, no name tag.
So we don't know much.
No collar, no. She's really sweet.
Bella was
people.
A rolling stone.
So what do we know? We know it's a fawn color dog, about Chihuahua size.
She's probably about 5 years old, and she's really, she loves people. She just
I can
loves
tell.
People. And she wants to bond. She needs a great home. She needs somebody that's going to love her and give her a lot of attention. I wouldn't say any big dogs. Maybe no cats.
Maybe no dogs in the house other than this one?
Well, she could be a well little dog. She's very active. She loves to play, so she'd love a companion.
Dave, this is perfect for Ozzy.
I really believe that, but except
we have about 38 dogs at Famous Fido in Chicago, from anywhere from poodles to pit bulls, and we have about 54 cats.
And a bunch of Chihuahua dogs.
We have a lot of Chihuahua dogs.
Why so many Chihuahuas?
Well, unfortunately, Chihuahuas are like pit bulls. People are breeding them, not taking care of them, and you know, there's 550,000 animals going to shelters every month, according to PetSmart Charities.
Wow.
And that's the ones we know about. So Chihuahuas, pit bulls, and cats are amongst the ones
that... I don't understand, Steve, why do they breed Chihuahuas?
I don't know why it's become a thing, but it really has. I agree with Gloria. So on one side, you get these larger dogs in general that we look at and call pit bulls. And in fact, they're just mixed breed dogs is all they are. Mm-hmm. And then you get these Chihuahua type dogs that are same thing. They're not real purebred Chihuahuas. They're mixed breed dogs like little Bella.
Chiweenie.
Okay, so when Bella came in, she's obviously you can hear her panting. Yeah. She's excited. But
that's
now,
Steve.
Oh, sorry, Steve. But now a few minutes later, you're just kind of rubbing her belly and she's falling asleep.
Well, she's just, you know, she just needs reassurance. That's the thing about animals. They need reassurance. They need to know that you're not going to hurt them, especially these guys. They have to fight monsters. They're little baby dogs and they have to fight big people, big dogs.
But they don't know their size, right? That's one of the coolest things about dogs.
Well,
you'll see Chihuahuas taking on Great Danes.
Yeah.
The best offense, the best defense is a good offense. Is that the expression? You know, so they know they're small and they know they could be stepped on by.
No, I'm being serious.
Dogs
don't know they're small, do they?
They
do.
What?
They know everything.
They do. Well, I don't know if they know everything.
They're real aware.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they know what their size is, and that's why they
see little dogs taking on big dogs all the time.
Because
I mean, Dave's not out there taking on Dan Hampton.
But if Dan Hampton walks toward Dave and Dave happens to go, woof, and then Dan backs off, next time you go, woof, woof. And he backs off even further.
Well, you got to stop. First, you got to stop barking at Hampton.
I know. Well, he made that clear to me.
I mean, that's weird.
I think they want their personal life kept more private. Oh, yeah. But
when the dogs are talking
about it, you know what I'm talking about. You've seen this,
absolutely.
Where a little dog starts yapping at a big dog.
They call it the Napoleon complex and all those things. Yeah. I mean, maybe some of that is true, but I do think that, in fact, I know they know their size, and that's part of the reason why they respond the way they do.
They told you?
They have told me this, yes.
Steve, I have a transporting your pet question. So a little dog like Bella, you can put in a little pet taxi
absolutely.
And take her with you. When you travel now, I mean, you're hearing all these different stories about you obviously don't want to put the dog in the cargo area. Are more dogs being allowed to be carried on now in pet taxis because of that?
Well, that's a complicated question, as it turns out. So United Airlines, in particular, said no more pets for the time being.
Period?
Yeah, yeah. And what... You know, so when all of that happened, and I'm referring to the dog that was put in the overhead that tragically died and never should have happened. I mean, I had, when I posted about a flight attendants who teach other flight attendants, they wrote me and said, we don't teach other flight attendants this because what would be the, we wouldn't even think of teaching them that because who would do something like that? There's no air, and if there's no air, they're not going to breathe, you know? So
well, what's funny is, until this happened, I didn't think of those overhead compartments as being airtight.
They're not airtight, but that's limited in the amount of air that
right, and
you
if you got a dog
there.
That's panicky.
And on top of it, it was a brachiocephalic breed, one of those breeds. It was a Boston Terrier with a pushed-in face. So they have difficulty breathing on a good day, you know? Mm. So it's not surprising. It's surprising what they did. It's not surprising what happened as a result. It's shocking what they did. So United Airlines, I was in email with them back and forth for a while, communication. And
you just have to ask, though, if you want to take your pet on.
No, you have to pay for it for the airlines that allow it. Okay. And there has to be availability.
But United now is in an embargo period for this?
I believe until the end of the month, and they have a special task force that's looking on it that I am told secondhand and should not mention it on the radio, so I won't, but okay. I might, that Cesar Millan is on this task force, which that means they'll even get more bad press. So I wish I could have worked with them on this, seriously.
Okay. What about these support animals? Because some people are exploiting the system.
They are exploiting the system. You're right. So United followed Delta Airlines and said, okay, we have new rules now. You cannot take, and they mentioned specific kinds of animals like reptiles. I mean, they don't believe they're comfort animals.
I
tarantulas.
Have a support gator.
You know, and I understand. I agree with them because they are.
Iguana.
By abusing the system, they're making it impossible down the road, potentially, for people who really need these animals as support animals.
Well, there's also allergies from people.
Well, the allergy part. Yes. So,
I mean, if you're worried about peanut dust on a plane, you ought to be worried about other animals on a plane.
Yes and no. So we.
No, yes and yes.
No!
Because if I'm the person on the plane that's allergic, that's a yes.
Yeah, what if you have like a deathly, you know, you're allergic to cats.
Yeah. Then don't touch the cat. You know, so unless
but
your
the
flight
is in the air as well, if you're sitting there.
Not that quickly, because the cat is in the carrier.
Tell it to my face.
The cat is in the carrier.
I'm just telling you.
You don't even know that a cat is there.
Oh, yes, I do.
Next to
you. Yes, I do. Because if I get near a cat, I die.
No, it's not the dander you're allergic to.
I'm not slamming all cats. I'm talking about my personal condition.
It's a protein on the saliva you're allergic to.
Don't act like it's not a matter to somebody like me or other people, because it is.
I understand that, but the cat should be in the carrier, and as long as the cat is in the carrier, and the flight is not 24 hours long, there's no opportunity.
Okay, doctor.
We'll have an allergist call us.
No, we don't need an allergist. We need my face. I'm just saying I don't want to be sitting next to a cat.
Yeah, I am like, I do not care for cats. They literally scare me. They really do. I don't know. They just scare me. So if I was sitting next to a cat on a plane, I would freak out. I think I would.
I miss cats.
Off the plane.
I like cats. When I was a little kid, I loved cats.
You probably wouldn't know you're sitting next to the animal. So I travel a fair amount, and it's happened to me where I don't even know what's in the carrier.
You'll
and the
sit
next
to a rabid wolf.
I would, but I don't even know what's in, I don't know what's in the
you're
carrier.
You're not a normal human being, so
that
you're
could
not
be.
The example.
Rabid
the
wolf.
Example is people. There has to be a consideration for both. If people need a legitimate support animal, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
But there has to be appropriate screening, and there has to be consideration for the other people as well.
Well, that's why I say it would be nice if a group of experts we're all brought together that can talk about these
things.
That's
why I'm taking my llama on the flight from now.
That's happened, actually. You know, an alpaca was taken on a flight somewhere, you know, several years ago, and it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Are an alpaca is like 6 feet tall?
Yeah, and they're not exactly house trained, so not 6 feet tall, but tall enough. Yeah, so
you want an extra peanut?
All right, so how do we adopt your
Bella?
Puppy?
So how you adopt Bella is call Famous Fido. Let's say call. Forget that. not call Famous Fido. Send an email to Famous Fido. Go to our website at famousfidorescue.org and fill out an application for Bella.
Who really needs a home.
And we will have an adoption counselor call you who really needs a home. She's wonderful.
She's so pretty.
And all the dogs at Famous Fido are wonderful. Oh. And I have a bunch of beautiful chihuahuas and all kinds of wonderful dogs and cats there. I'm not going to tell the cats what you said today.
And you have a big benefit.
Listen, no, you can tell the cats. Listen, I got no war with the cats. The cats know where they are.
You're allergic. So you have a big benefit coming up.
We have a wonderful benefit coming up. It's the biggest benefit we've ever done. It's at the Stan Mansion at 2408 North Kedzie. And there's going to be beautiful entertainment and a buffet and a silent auction. And this benefit is to help all of the animals. We're celebrating life of animals and the year of the dog at the benefit. And it's to help our rescue and our facility save many, many more lives.
And no kill is a term that's been bantied about a whole lot, but you truly are just that.
Oh, we definitely do not believe in any kind of killing of or euthanizing animals that are healthy. And what I have learned in the past 5 years, that there's all kinds of different situations with animals, and not everybody is right for every dog and cat. And it's what happens is that you get these animals from puppy mills or backyard breeders. People adopt them. They don't know how to work with them. Something happens. They bring them to a shelter. The new adopter doesn't know how to handle the situation, and they go back right into
it. It's a bad cycle.
Yeah, it's a bad cycle. So there needs to be way more education. Breeding of animals in backyards and puppy mills has to be eliminated, and people have to microchip. It has to be mandated because these strays cannot find their way home.
That's true.
So, we got a text here that says, my neighbor has a beautiful little chihuahua. Is that the term? But says, I feel badly because he always looks terrified. Is the dog scared because he's little, or is that just the countenance of the dog?
Some of these dogs actually seem scared all the time. Sometimes it's the weather. So if it's below like 50 degrees, these dogs will be shivering.
So it's what you said before. They just need comfort. They need comfort.
And they need early socialization as well.
Right.
You know, this dog will be fine,
they need to be kept away from the alpacas.
And me.
But these dogs will be, this particular dog will be absolutely
fine
once it has a family. Mm-hmm. By the way, that benefit, you didn't say this, is May 11th.
May 11th. I'm sorry.
Information on the website?
Information on the website, and we hope that your listeners will come because we're trying to raise $100,000 at that benefit.
Oh, great.
It goes all to the animals, and we do a lot of great work. We help a lot of homeless people with interventions so animals don't go to shelters.
Yeah.
And we adopt a lot. We talk about
the only one. This is the only person I know who does that in the only facility that says, okay, you're homeless, you have a problem, obviously. You have nowhere for the animal because the homeless shelters don't allow animals in Chicago. So what do you do with the animal? So you either stay outside or you give up the animal, and Gloria helps those people out personally.
For 46 years.
46.
Just getting started.
I don't want to admit that.
Just getting started.
We got a lot more work to do.
All right, we're quickly going to run out of time here, but are you doing dog days at the Sox?
I hope so. You know, it all began as a result of yours truly having this crazy idea you could help promote then Comiskey Park. Actually, by bringing dogs to the ballpark. And
now everybody's doing it.
Now, almost every Major League Baseball team and the minor league teams do it, Dave, what? Two or three times a season. Something.
Yeah, and I believe the White Sox have one coming up, I think, very soon.
Well, and here's the thing.
I think on the next homestand.
If I remember the story right, they said, you're the Cubs guy, you're the Cubs station, we can't talk to you. Well, we're the White Sox station now.
We certainly
you
got to
have
are.
Steve Dale there.
Yeah, thank
sure.
you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd love to be.
All right. People want to hear you Saturday or Sunday morning at 6:30. And also, how do they stay in touch with you?
SteveDale.tv. You could read more there about this dog, Bella.
Bella.
Yeah,
please
really.
Adopt Bella.
Yeah. Well, we need to find a home. And this dog will be a great dog. It needs to, you put it right, it needs to bond to a family.
She's a great dog.
Yeah,
right.
She is.
Nice to see you. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for the work
you're
doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
To Pharrell, and I said, come get it, come get it, come get it. And then I remembered Beyonce and me, and we came up with this.
I like it.
And Pharrell said, Queen B. I said, no, Queen Bay. I straightened him out. Yeah. Music of my people, 928. Last night, the first of a week-long barrage of former FBI Director James Comey started with an interview with George Stephanopoulos. I thought Stephanopoulos was great. He asked a ton of tough questions. He didn't let Comey off the hook on anything, but he also gave Comey the room to explain his side of things. And Comey made a very reasonable request. He said, look, before you judge, read the book. Read the book. That does not seem outlandish. And when the question of impeachment came up at the end of the interview, I don't agree with this take, but I thought it was an interesting answer. Comey said, I hope he's not impeached. Trump, we're talking about. I hope he's not impeached because it would let the American people off the hook. The American people need to do it the way we always do it and vote your conscience. Now, everybody all over is going, they already did vote their conscience. No, he's talking about in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was an interesting answer.
I thought so, too.
But I don't like the idea of you're stuck with him. You know, it's too important. It's the presidency. So one more clip from last night. Super Joe, this is number four. Is that right? This is, again, Jim Comey and George Stephanopoulos. What happened when he walked in and had to brief the president on Russian hookers and the like? Listen.
How graphic did you get?
I think as graphic as I needed to be. I did not go into the business about people peeing on each other. And he interrupted, started talking about it. You know, do I look like a guy who needs hookers? I didn't answer that. And then I just moved on and explained, sir, I'm not saying that we credit this. I'm not saying we believe it. We just thought it very important that you know.
So what was the look on his face?
He was very defensive and started going into the list of people who had accused him of touching them improperly, sexual assault, and how he hadn't done this, he hadn't done that, he hadn't done that.
Did you tell him that the Steele dossier had been financed by his political opponents?
No. I didn't even think I used the term Steele dossier. I just talked about additional material.
But did he have a right to know that?
That it had been financed by his political opponents? I don't know the answer to that. It wasn't necessary for my goal, which was to alert him that we had this information.
Did you believe his denial?
Honestly, never thought these words would come out of my mouth, but I don't know whether the current president of the United States was with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow in 2013. It's possible, but I don't know.
How weird was that briefing?
Really weird. I just wanted to get it done and get out of there.
Right after leaving the meeting, Comey began to take notes about Trump's startling behavior, fearing that the president-elect might later lie about what was said.
I had obviously concerns about that earlier, having watched him on the campaign, that he is someone for whom the truth is not a high value.
Yeah, truth is not the instinct. Look, I don't know if Donald Trump was involved with Russian hookers who needed to pee. I don't know. I don't know. It's a terrible story all the way around. And I certainly hope, because he's president of the United States, I certainly hope he wasn't. But there's a move Trump makes. If I said something completely outrageous about you,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't true,
mm-hmm.
would you answer that with a question?
No.
This is the move he always makes. If you said something completely outrageous about me, would I say, do I look like the kind of person that would do that?
No.
That's a dodge. The answer is, where would you come up with something like that? That's nothing.
Why would you say
that? That's the question. If you're going to ask a question, that's the question. I don't know why you'd say that. And then you got to follow somewhere in there. It's absolutely not true. And I'm not going to sit here and have you say that about me.
Right. And as I continue to deny it, I would say that's outlandish. That's ridiculous.
Right.
Show me the proof. I will show you proof.
But you don't go, do I look like a guy who would be around Russian hookers?
No.
You don't go, oh, everybody knows that isn't true because I use a lot of hand sanitizer and I'm a germaphobe.
Or what he said to Stephanopoulos, he said to him, too, do I look like I would need hookers, period.
Right. The Trumpster. To his credit, he hasn't lost his mind on Twitter this morning. A little surprised by that. 9:33, news next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. When I'm walking with you.
Been talking a lot about Jim Comey's book. How about Joanna Cole's book? You ever look at dating now and just go, man, I don't know how people do it.
Yeah.
It's not like the old days. Stumble into a bar, get sideways, meet somebody, go home, regret it. You know, those days.
How you doing?
Sarah Jessica Parker says about the book, I'm not sure what Carrie Bradshaw would have made of today's new world of dating, but I know armed with love rules, she would have figured it out in one season. And John Oliver said, generally, you never want to take emotional advice from a Brit. Joanna Coles is a very rare exception to that rule. Is she standing by now? She is. Let's go there and say hi to the legendary Joanna Coles.
Hi.
Ms. Coles, good morning.
Hi.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for coming on. Former chair, or the chief content officer, I should say, of Hearst Magazine, is also editor-in-chief at one time, Marie Claire, editor-in-chief at Cosmo. I'm sorry, your career's not working out.
Well, I have really enjoyed writing this book, and it was inspired by a lot of the readers I met at Marie Claire and Cosmo, who were, you know, enjoying themselves in their work lives. They were really feeling successful, but having real difficulty getting good relationships with men.
You lay out this book in the rules, and I love one, number four, the treadmill's not going to run on its own, climb on and press start. In other words, if you don't try, it's not going to happen.
Absolutely, and I call it a diet book for love because food and love have so much in common. We've got huge appetites for both. We can't live without them. But just as there is lots of junk food, there's also junk love. And I think with the digital apps, which have really changed the landscape in how people meet people, and they're fantastic. This is not an anti-digital book. They're a wonderful arrow in your quiver to find someone. But the flip side of them is they can make people feel really interchangeable and that relationships are utterly transactional and that you just want sex, that's it, goodbye, hello, goodbye again. And so remembering that love is really the stuff of life, it's what makes us feel alive, it gets you up in the morning, it's exciting, that's what I want to make sure people can engage with. And there definitely are rules around digital behavior, and one of the big reveals for me was, having talked to hundreds of women for this book and a lot of men, is the enormous amount of time, and I think of it in terms of emotional calories, that people spend sort of having these flirtatious exchanges, text exchanges, you know, all over social media with people they've connected with on dating apps but haven't met in real life. And then when they do eventually meet them in real life, the person is completely different from who they thought they'd been communicating with. And so one of the big pieces in the book is how to get offline as fast as you can and meet this person in real life. Always have a phone call first, because by that you will know whether or not this is someone you actually want to spend time with. And then get offline and into real life to figure out if you can be part of each other's lives. And also, I think, don't always go on an app thinking, I'm going to find the one, I'm going to find the one, because you might not find the one, but you might find someone you want to add to your life to have a bigger life. And that's the goal here.
Joanna, that was key. That's what I was going to ask you about, talking versus texting or email. We just had a conversation off the air about this, about how we all usually just either text or email with each other. But talk as quickly, talking to the person as quickly as you can, correct? And how often have you seen a great virtual relationship, either email or texting, and then when they meet or start talking, it all kind of falls apart?
Right. Well, that's what the big complaint is, that people have wasted all sorts of time having a really fun, flirty exchange with someone they thought they knew. And in fact, the science around our digital behavior is very new, but there are some really, really interesting people, academics, doing research on this. One of them, Mary Akin, is a brilliant cyber psychologist, and she talks about how when you actually meet in real life, if you've connected first online, you're actually bringing four selves to the date, the two real life selves, and then the two selves you've curated online. And of course, it's very easy then, if you've had, you know, hundreds of text exchanges or even dozens, to come to the date with different expectations, and then it can go badly wrong. So I think the key is, once you've had a match, to have a phone call quickly. Don't waste an enormous amount of time fussing around, flirting with someone online, because it doesn't really mean anything. It might be fun, it might be distracting, but you're not actually getting to know someone. The only way you get to know someone is by having all five of your senses in play to figure out if you have anything in common.
I love the metaphors and the analogies to a relationship with a diet, and the donut being a metaphor for the ex.
Yes, the donut. This is one of my favorite analogies, because we've all been in that place where we want affection, we want intimacy, we want to go to bed with someone and be held and hug someone, right? It's the stuff of life. But when there's no one around, the easiest thing in the world to do is to send a text to an ex. And I liken this to the 4 o'clock sugar slump. You're just like, your energy's gone, you want something easy that you know is going to be a quick pick-me-up. So it's like reaching for the donut at 4 o'clock. You get immediate satisfaction. It's sweet, it's comfortable, it's familiar. And then an hour later, you're like, ugh, why did I do that? And you're still hungry. So it's really a no-no.
That's very funny.
You know, you can't move on in your life until you've said goodbye to the ex. And by all means, stay in touch. But if you keep slipping back into bed together, it's really difficult to commit to the next stage, which is getting back out there again.
See, I have a concern for people because so much of it is done in writing now. When, you know, back in a decade we called the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, where you had to go somewhere and you had to meet human beings and you had to have the power of conversation and look at people in the eyes, there was a risk involved in it, but there was a way to assess each other that you cannot do digitally by just swapping texts and emails. Right. And I wonder if that's a skill that's being lost.
I think that's a really great point, and it is a skill that's being lost because the neural pathways change according to how much time you spend on your devices. And again, this is not an anti-digital book. I'm never giving up my phone, but it's not a zero-sum game. And you can get offline. And the trouble is, the more time you spend connecting with each other online, it comes at the expense of the practice of actual real-life communication. And real-life communication, as being on the phone, can be awkward, right? You've got to establish eye contact, you talk over each other, you misstate what someone said. But by a process of practice, you get better and better at it, and it's much more fulfilling. And the more time we spend on our devices, it's a bit of a vicious circle. The less time you want to spend in real life with people, and yet that's the stuff that's fulfilling. And we know that millennials would rather stick a needle in the corner of their eye without an anesthetic than they would pick up the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Picking up the phone.
Last, that's a worst.
And yet it's such a good shortcut.
Yeah, you're going to be ahead of the game. This is like when your parents tell you to do the homework when you're a junior and senior, you're going to be ahead. You're going to be ahead in the dating game if you actually talk to somebody.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And this book is for millennials dating, looking for love. It's also for people who are widowed or divorced going back out there again. And the landscape has totally transformed.
I've got a dating app. It's called Call Me. And all it is you swipe through, you find a picture of someone who looks interesting, and then it says, call me, and you have to call. That's it. That's the entire dating app.
That's a great idea. That is a great idea. And I'm a big fan also of Bumble, because that allows women to make the first move.
Yep.
And the interesting thing about cyberspace is it's designed by men for men. And so one of the complaints I heard repeatedly from women on some of the other apps is that they are deluged by photographs from men, which they don't want. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And the nice thing about Bumble is it actually gives women the power to make a move, and you have to make a move within 24 hours. So you can't simmer these connections on the back.
It's really smart.
Debating, and using your energy to figure out, should I call them? You either have to commit or move on. And that's good, too, because otherwise you can really waste emotional calories on this stuff.
Just remember, guys, there's a reason his name was Anthony Weiner. That's it. It's called Love Rules. Get multiple copies. You're careless, you'll lose one. I'm going to get one for Jim Comey and Donald Trump. Maybe we can put the two of them together.
That's your beer summit right there.
Excellent. They need to talk more.
They really do. Love Rules. Joanna, congrats on the book. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good luck to all your listeners looking for love.
There you go. Love Rules. Sounds much better in her accent, doesn't it? Bill and Wendy coming up, 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Conquer your depression and anxiety and defeat feeling sad, losing interest, and hopelessness. Well, your life turns around, doesn't it? Highly esteemed anesthesiologist Dr. Bail Nandra from IV Solution and Ketamine Centers of Chicago uses ketamine to treat major depression. Every time I turn around, I'm seeing another story about this. It's been called the greatest advancement in mental health treatment in over 50 years. Ketamine's been shown to be up 80% effective against treatment-resistant depression. So folks who have significant, serious clinical depression able to use ketamine with great success. The treatment is simple. It's 6 45-minute IV infusions done over 2 weeks in a private professional monitored setting. You could feel better in a few hours or days, but listen, 80% success, I like your chances. Ketamine treatments will give you the potential to reduce or eliminate your antidepressant meds and the unwanted side effects. See why IV Solutions patient Connie described her ketamine experience as a miracle. Ketamine can also conquer your chronic pain, migraines, PTSD, fibromyalgia. We're just now getting a full understanding of the broad range of success ketamine can bring. Call for your free consultation, 844-9-IV-MEDS, 844-948-6337, or go to KetamineChicago.com, spell it KETAMINE, KetamineChicago.com. Yes, Sam?
Dr. Nadra will be in tomorrow with a patient at 7:40.
Oh, good.
So we'll get to talk to him.
I like what he's doing. It's a cool thing.
It's pretty cool.
Bill and Wendy are here. Hi.
Hey, Steve.
Morning.
Did you watch the interview last night?
Yes.
I did not. I'm boycotting everything.
Oh. Everything.
Until it stops snowing.
Oh. Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Interesting choice. Huh. So are you saying Comey and Trump caused the snow?
Mm-hmm.
A diversion.
Exactly.
That Trump, he'll start anything.
He's crazy that way.
Yeah. What are you doing today?
We got a bunch of Chiweenies on, Steve. Have you ever met a Chiweenie?
I met a Chiweenie. What?
Chiweenie.
A lot different. I think that's different.
Yes. That's the tape that Trump was on in Moscow, right?
Oh, boy.
Wendy's boycotting that because of the snow.
We are going to talk about the whole Syria developments with an expert, because should we be worried? Should we be worried
Apparently
about
not.
Everything?
Apparently
I don't know.
Not. Yeah, we invaded a country. We threw a bunch of missiles in a country Friday night. By Saturday, nobody was talking about
Let's
it.
Move on.
Yeah, that's just so. It is.
Bizarre.
I'm boycotting the world.
See you tomorrow.